So we have one nekuda left from the previous sugya before we move on to the next one. So just to recap for a moment, we left off last week. So we were talking about this chazaka, that ein adam parei atamano, that we're very, very convinced that people do not pay back their chovos before the time comes, and the whole array of halachas that emanated from that chazaka. First and foremost, the fact that a person claims that they did pay back within the Zman, that's a meaningless claim. If a person claims that they paid back after the Zman, that is, generally speaking, that is to some degree an acceptable claim. But a person claims that they paid back within the time, so we totally ignore that claim. We ignore that claim to such an extent, so unlikely that a person paid back within the time, that's going to even impact on the Allah concerning Yorshim. That if Reuben comes to the sons of the Yorshim of Shimon, and he says that I have a chov against your father. So usually we have a rule called that Taboli Par B'Nichsi Yisavu or Yipal B'Shvua. If you have like a Shvua before you can even touch Nechasim of Yisavim, here the Gemara says that Allah has trumped. If Shimon died before this man was over, after all, the whole concern, the whole reason why we make the Malvis swear that it wasn't paid off because we're concerned that maybe she would pay it, we don't know about, but forget about it, she wouldn't pay a penny. There's no way she would pay a penny because Einan and Paretov's Mano. So the halacha of Einan and Paretov's Mano works to trump a response of Parati. It works to trump an otherwise requirement of a Shvua. But there's one last point to this that's not clear, and that's the issue that tells us races. How would this halacha play out if there were some Katanim? If I come to the Bnei Shimon, the sons of the Lova, they happen to be 10 years old, under the age of a mitzvah. So now what? So normally the starting point is that lo yipar v'nichsi yisom, ein yiskach v'nichsim ketanim. You can't touch the chasim of yisom ketanim. Would that halach apply if the Lova died before this man of the Hova arrived? So that was a throwback to the Gemara's in Masechas Erechin as to why is it that why are little children untouchable? Have a star with the father over the money. So, I feel bad. I want to be a nice guy and give him a break. But Tachas, you can do this so hard. This indicates that the father will be money. I'm about to collect my home. You know, the Yisomim. So why is it that Amy's got the next Yisomim? So he's mentioned at the end of the Shul last week, there was a major machlek Yisomaroi, but he's a puppet or who would have been sure. Why is that? Is that a lacha true? So Rav Papa said, because paying back chovos is fundamentally a religious obligation. It's a moral, ethical, you gave your word, of course you have to pay. It's fundamentally religious in nature, and therefore, Yisrael Malah B'nei Mitzvah, Yisrael are the age of Mitzvah, they're not mechuyev to perform mitzvahs, the same way they don't have to put on tefillin, they don't have to come to shul daven. So, they don't have to pay back the chavos of the father, which by mitzvah, we'll worry about after by mitzvah. And Rav Huna ben Yeshua said that's not the reason why. Said the obligation to pay back chavos, as the Rabban explained, is not religious in nature, it's legal in nature. It's a chav, it's a shibud. When I lend you money, I acquire a lien on your property. So I own a shtick of your car, I have a shtick of your property. So of course I'm entitled to get the repaid. So why is it that I can't go after Yisom Katanim? Because there's this possibility out there. But maybe the father, before he died, came up with some kind of an agreement. He hit for Tzvari, put aside some jewels somewhere, and he gave it to the Malvus. I said, Malvus, I'm not paying you back yet, but hold on to it. So Shtukh Mashkon, put it in the corner somewhere, just in case I don't pay, you can go ahead and take this item that I gave you. How are the little kids going to know whether that happened or not? If they're bar mitzvah, they'll do their research, they'll hire a detective, they'll figure out, they'll ask questions, they'll look around, they'll snoop around the father's documents of it. The 10-year-old kids, how are you going to know that? So therefore, there's always this despair in the back of my mind that maybe your father made some kind of a payment plan. He didn't mom's pay yet. It's some kind of a shtickle payment plan that would not permit us to go ahead and collect the money from yourself until we prove otherwise. So now with this background that we left off on Friday, now let's begin our sugya. So how would the halacha play out in our sugya? So Reuven, I don't mean the next one, still missing. So Reuven comes to Shimon's Yisom, 10-year-old kids, and says, listen, your father died before this man came. The chov wasn't even Higiyah's man yet. The chov is not due for another 6 months. Your father died already. Come to 6 months later, I want to collect my chovos. What's that response now? So comes to us and says, let's analyze this. Bein the fear of Pav and bein the fear of Huna. According to Rabbah, what prevented us from collecting the chol from the kids was the fact that they weren't obligated in mitzvahs. They're still not obligated in mitzvahs. Which means, even though we know for a fact, we say with certainty, 100%, chazocha ein anam perev sochman, we know with absolute 1,000% certainty that the father did not direct the chol. According to the Rabbah, that's true but irrelevant. What does that do anything? According to the Rabbah, we were never concerned to pay back the chol. What we were concerned about was is that we can't go after the Yisrael with a religious obligation. So the game's only going to drop off. According to the Rabbah, you're not going to, until this kid turns by a mitzvah, you're not going to be able to touch his property because the law b'nei mitzvah did it. What about according to the Rabbah of Yeshua? So that's a little bit tricky one. According to the Rabbah of Yeshua, the whole reason why we don't go after some ketanim because there was some kind of a quasi-payment plan here. Would that payment plan have been put into effect before the Zman? Is that something that a person would do before the Zman of the Havah is up? Now we know that people don't pay back kovos before the time is up. That's Rish Lachish, Chazokh and Parentach Zman. But should we say that Chazokh ain't on the Matthis Tzrori to Chazman also? I have no idea. I don't know what the answer to that question is. So Agamar says that Eidolim Pareta Chizmano, Eidolim Pareta, that's so very nice. But here we're not really afraid he paid back the money. What was Tzrori out to say? Was he not Tzrori or not? If there's reason to believe the Lover may have decided to put a couple of jewels in a bag and stick it into the Malva's house, and it was, don't touch it. Put it in a drawer, stick it in the vault somewhere, don't touch it. Because I may come and just pay cash in a few months from now. Don't touch it. Can we assume that happened before this man comes or not? Is there reason to believe that happens or not? So Tosis is looking through Shas and trying to figure out, do we have any rayas one with the other? So Tosis went back to the Gemara Erichin. The Gemara Erichin says that according to Huda Beit Yeshua, there are times when we're comfortable saying, lo hitvis tzrori. There are situations, there are scenarios that play out that we don't have to be concerned with tzrori. And therefore, according to Huda Beit Yeshua, the din would be, you do collect on those circumstances. According to a papa, there's no time you collect from Yisrael Ketanim, Lab and Mitzvah, middle of the game is over. But according to Rav Huna, who said that paying back Chomos has nothing to do with Mitzvahs, that's to do with the Imamnus. And if and when there's such a concern of Hitvis Tzrora, then no. And that concern can be alleviated, then yes. So the Gemara actually lists off a few examples of when we're not so worried about Hitvis Tzrora. The Gemara says, what if right before the first person died on his deathbed, he admitted that he's chayav to pay. He told his kids, go pay back my chayavus. So, if the guy right before he died admitted that he has to pay, obviously there was no hitvis tzrori. If there would have been hitvis tzrori, he would have told his kids about that. But the Gemara gives another example. What if he was supposed to pay, right? He gets mad at Piron already 6 months ago, and the Malva took him to a din Torah, and the guy refused to come to a din Torah, refused to cooperate. The thing is, that the guy in the old days, the guy doesn't come to the Torah, put him to Chayim. So they put him to Chayim. The Umeis Peshamte, the Gemara says, he died, he was still in Chayim. The Gemara says, obviously, he didn't give Tzorari. If he would have given Tzorari, he would have told the base that I get when you put me to Chayim. I paid the guy in the So when there are reasons to believe that we are absolutely 1,000,000% certain that the person did not pay back the Chol, then according to Rav Huna Beit Yeshua, we're going to take money from the little kids. According to Rav Papa, we won't. According to Rav Huna, we will. So Tosu says, is a chol besocha zman the halach equivalent of dying in the middle of chayrim? Is it the halach equivalent of the person being made that he owes the money? Are we really convinced, just how serious are we convinced, that ein adam osa klum betoch zmano? So does it meet that threshold of being so convinced, and therefore, according to Rabbi Yeshua, you can go ahead and be niskak l'ichsi yisabim. So Tosu says, we don't know. We're not sure. According to Papa, it's a moot point. According to Huna, after your name, and tells the stories back and forth to bring your eyes.
Is the collateral we should give in at the beginning?
So this is a funny thing. This is not a regular mashka. This is not a strange kind of a thing. Right? There are different kinds of mashkas. There's a mashka b'shasavah, the mashka shlo b'shasavah. Yeah, it's not clear what this is exactly.
What can we view it as based on being the, how do you say, the holder of all the rights of the soul? So it's a mammal's thing. But it's sort of like it's at the hand, so everyone sort of like basin steps in for Yisomen, and therefore there's no towing on these on basin until people become 13. In other words, it's not an issue of whether he did or not. It's sort of like put it into an escrow account for basin.
But Lamaze, why should that be fair? But if we know for a fact, the guy lets it lead to you based on when it's 100% certain that the Yisomim owe me money. So, I mean, if I want to be a nice guy and I collect that money, that's wonderful. And what if the Yisomim are very, very wealthy? Their needs are more than taken care of. They owe me the money. So they owe me the money. So why should I have to wait? I want to go invest money with this now. Why should I wait for 5 years so they turn on it? Well, so there has to be some real reason that's preventing tying the Beis Din hands. You're right. Beis Din is trying to help Yisomim here. That's true. But not at the expense of another party. So even Beis Din can't collect because the money mitzvah. Because we're afraid of something, that's fine. But if it's just arbitrarily not to collect from Yisomim, there's no such thing. There's no such thing. I think I mean, how those laws, I don't know. I mean, what's in secular law, if a person dies, leaves an estate to little kids, if they're chobos that are paid, what, nothing's done until the kids turn 18, I imagine that the credit card company goes after their problem. It's their father's problem. That's the way it is. Okay, all right, that was just the shirayim a little bit from Friday. Now we begin the next sugya. So our next sugya is going to be a combination of two very, very important halachic principles that come into conflict with one another. Very often you have sugyas like this, that each part of the sugya in of itself is full of lumdus, and then the lumdus almost like explodes exponentially when the two sugyas start to clash with one another. So one of the principles is a principle that we've been speaking about already several times, and hopefully that's going to begin cheskes about them shortly afterwards. So we're going to come back to many, many times. That's the principle of Migo. So the principle of Migo seems to be a very straightforward, very generous way of saying it. Seems to be very, very straightforward, but it's actually a very, very profound sugya. But Migo basically means this. Have a good issue, and you have to respond. You have to give some kind of a taina to explain why you're not chayav. So there are many, many tainas that are acceptable tainas. We'll give the simplest case. I say, I lent you $1,000. Your simplest, most basic taina is to say, go jump in the lake. Go hoyu dvar me'olam. I don't know who you are. I never met you before. Go hoyu dvar me'olam. So if I say, you owe me $1,000, and you respond, go hoyu dvar me'olam, obviously you're going to win the din Torah. If you're not Torah, you're going to win the din Torah hands down. You don't even have to do anything. There's no need to pay. There's no need to take a shvua. You're a kofa by kohol. It's an easy case. My word against your word. Let's go to Baraya. Finish. Sometimes you have other kinds of responses where I say you owe me $1,000 and you give a kind of a response and your response is not such a good response. And whatever the case is, you give me a whole shuk of terror why you don't really owe me the money. So basically, listening to your words and they say, wait a second, this doesn't sound right. This in and of itself is not an invalid response, but wait a second, you, the responder who gave an invalid response, could have responded something that would have been valid. You could have said, you had that option. There's nothing stopping you from saying, look, I don't have a star, I don't have an eight, it's why I'm going to use your word. So you could have said, but you didn't. You gave a whole simple term why you don't really owe me the money. You tell me a story, you really did have the money and you borrowed the money and then you didn't pay back the money, but I broke your window in last week and I never paid you. You give me a long, I'm gonna 20 pages long, but the basin is laughing, it's all full of holes. But Migo, you could have said that jumping like I never saw you. So that's the classic principle of Migo. Those are the mothers, Mishnayos, and Sugya Shlemus and Shas, so many sodas, sugyas, sprinkled throughout the Chesabatim has many, many of those. Ksubas is action-packed with Migos. They're klolim gedolim of Migo. One of the strangest things about Migo is that, two strange things about Migo. One is, we don't know where it comes from exactly. The Gemara, at least not explicitly, ever asked the question, where did this principle come from exactly? Is this a divinity Torah? Is it based on an apostle? It's unclear exactly what the source of Migo is. And it's also unclear why exactly Migo works. The simplest reason why Migo works is that it's almost like a proof. It's like a road. Like the odds are, most of the time when people lie, they like to lie the simplest, basic, easy lie. So if I'm telling you a story, and I could have said an easy lie, I could have gotten out by just simply saying, I borrowed the money from you, and that would have been so easy. No one would have questioned that. And the fact that I'm telling you a whole convoluted Megillah, I'm probably telling the truth, because if I wanted to lie, I would have had an easier way to lie. So that's the simple shot. to be determined whether that's the only pshat or the correct pshat. That's a simple pshat. So the fact that Nigo exists, that's pretty simple. There are Mishnayos and Gemaras that talk about the principle of Nigo. Then you have another principle called Shtarcha Biyadi Maimoi. It's also a principle that we've been discussing already for a while. Shtarcha Biyadi Maimoi means that I come to you and I say, I lent you $1,000. And you respond, I paid back $1,000. So if it would just be my word against your word, you would be believed. The same way you're believed to say, I didn't borrow the money in the first place, you're also believed to say, I paid back the money. I don't even need ego for that. That's just a simple response. People pay back chovos. Sometimes people pay back chovos. So whether in time or not in time, people do tend to pay back chovos at some point. So when I say you owe me $1,000 and you say, I paid it back to you, come on, you're done. Mina Torah, you're kind of goodbye. You don't have to pay. You don't have to shvur nothing. But the rabbanim with a shvur, you should assess that. That's a technicality. But meikamikra did my word against your word. You're cut from my cult, and the game's over. However, everything changes if I have a shtar. If I have a document that says that you owe me $1,000, and you say parati, so I turn around and say, excuse me, parati? Really? You paid me back? Shtarcha biyadi, my boy. So why do I stop the document? You should either insist on the document back, you should have ripped up the document, or bare minimum, ask for a receipt, for a shomer. You have none of the above. I'm walking around with the document. So that's also a given, a posher, that's a principle to sugim of a basar. Dafay is a sugim of a basar. Later on, dafay, it's a sugim of a sugi shlemus in the Gemara called shtach of yad in my boy. Interesting also, the Gemara never asks where to come from. The Gemara never questions what the source for this principle is. Did we figure this out on our own? It's basically kind of a pasuk. What's it all about? Unclear. So we have these two klalim in halacha. Each one is for sure true independently. We have a migo that's for sure valid tool in dinim amunos. We have a shtarcha biyadi maimoi, which is also valid in dinim amunos. And now we have a clash between the two. And we're trying to figure out, what do you do when you have a conflict between the two? Migos pointed in a direction to help one of the baladin. Shtarcha biyadi maimoi is pointed in a direction to help the other baladin. What do you do? So the emes is that this is not really baba basa dafe. This case per se, this shayla per se, doesn't appear in the Gemara. Appears in Tosfos. Tosfos makes a whole tumble, a whole simmer out of what would the halacha be, because it impacts on some of the other things that we're talking about here. We're talking about the migos against chazakos made of the parental zmanos. So Tosfos takes us in a whole long-winded discussion about, well, what would the din be in such a case? A migo against the shtach b'yad b'boy. So we're going to learn the sugya, but it's a little bit more of a fourth parak sugya than a first parak sugya, but again, it makes its appearance in the first parak of Tosfos, and since we don't play this modestly, standing to the fourth parak, I'll make it to part of the third parak, so we're going to try to analyze a little bit of the sugya at this point as well. So the emes is that the sugya really begins, not at the fe, it actually begins at the ayin, and it's a sugya that we already spoke about in the past because it already surfaced previously in our discussion, and that starts off with the third of the Mamakalos. So it was a shakla that appears in Rebastaf Ayin of Analf and the third of the Mamakalos. Bomini Rabbi Rav Chisda. Hamafkir Eitzel Chadero Gushtar Va'amalo Hechzartim Lecha Mahu. I come to you and I say, I didn't say lend you money. I lent, that's the problem in English, as we said, lent two things. I lent you my car. I lent you my, I gave you an item to watch. I gave you an animal to watch. And not only did I give it to you, I'm nervous. You know, I don't want to give you my car without any documentation. So you read the shtar. So you signed the shtar. You signed the shtar. It says that I gave you my car. I gave you my animal. And you, I say to you, where's the animal? So you respond, where's the animal? I gave it up. But you last week, where's the animal? I gave it back to you a while ago. Mahu, what's the deal? Is that a valid response or not? So, what are the two tzedakim? Niam rinan, do we say, migo di boy amanen su meheman, hashtanami meheman? So, that response on its own 2 feet, to say that I return the animal to you, is a very problematic response because that is contradicted by a shtachmir, my boy. The same way when I lend you money and you say I paid you back, it's very nice, but I have a document still in my hands. So too, when I say I gave you the animal and you claim you returned it, I turn around and say, my boy, you signed the document saying that you took that animal to watch. You signed the rent-a-car agreement. So
I say to you, I said, well, where's the card? He said, I gave it back to you. Give it back to me. Where's your receipt? Where's the shah? Well, I still have the paperwork. What happened to your receipt? So comes Rav Amram and poses the question of Krista. Maybe the din should be that he's takanat ne'amon because shtach miyad by boy. So comes the one change and says no. Mi amrina, do we say mikudi boy amar nensumehim? When I say that I gave you that animal to watch, so it's true that just to respond directly that you returned it doesn't seem to be correct, but you have migo in your back pocket. What's your migo? You could have said nensum. You could have said the car was struck by lightning. Could have said that the animal was taken away by a tsunami. You could have said Nansu. If you would have said Nansu, you would have been Potter. A Shemir's Potter, the Nansu. We got the details. But the Shemachim Shemir, Nansu, the Shem would be Potter. And if you would have said that, you would have been Naman. It's a possible Chumash, but you would have been Naman. So the Gemara says that, Migo de Boy Amen Nansu Behemon. Hashtadam Behemon. So now, listen to this. You should be Naman to say Hechzardi. Not because Hechzardi per se is a valid response, but it's Hechzardi b'migo didn't answer. Oduma, Rav Amram wasn't so sure. Said, Amalei, shtach b'yad my boy. He could say, no, shtach b'yad my boy. So what the Gemara basically is now, is our sugya. These are two different proofs in halacha. On the one hand, migo is a great koach in halacha. On the other hand, shtach b'yad my boy is a great koach in halacha. And now the two can conflicting with one another. It's a clash between the two. So is the Shema believed to say Hezardi Migo the Nansu or not? So Amalei Mehemon. So Rav Chizda responded to him, he's believed. So I fact the Gemara, Balaimli Shtach Biyad my boy. What do you say? Shtach Biyad my boy. So Amalei Nansu, Mimatsu, Shtach Biyad my boy. To go back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. Is one better than the other? Is the other better than the other? Back and forth and back and forth. And finally, the Gemara concludes, Shtach Nehemon. That is that one to say Hezardi. There's only one catch that the Gemara says. But he says that Hezardi, he's believed Migo that he could have said Nansu. What's the catch? If he would have said Nansu, he would have had to do one thing. He would have had to take a Shvur. Shvur Hashem to Yabin Shneim. So when he says Hezardi, he has to take a Shvur also. Now, normally, if a person says a Taina, really Migo, then you don't have to take a Shvur. If the time is believable, so Migo, then you don't need a Shvur. But here, the time is only believable, Migo, that he would have said Nansu. But Nansu Gufi would have had to take a Shvur. So obviously, we can't let him get off without a Shvur. That would undermine the entire principle of the Migo. So the bottom line is the Gemara seems to conclude that it's okay. That the Gemara's conclusion is, Itake is believed. But we want to go back for a moment and understand what was the subject of the Gemara. That's really where the Sugi begins.
Leads with a Shvur.
But we want to understand what exactly was the issue in the world. What was the Gemara concerned about? What was the Nakudas HaSafek, whether Shtach HaBiyad Bai Boy should be so powerful that it should undermine even the Koach of Amigo? So there is a Rashbam on the fifth of the Ramakamos. The Rashbam takes a stab at what the problem was. Like, at the end of the day, it's going to work. But what was the concern exactly? So comes Rashbam, the fifth of the Ramakamos. Alduma Amalei, Mafkid, the owner of the animal could say, Shtach biyad my boy. Lohoy lochal aniyach hashtar biyadi. You shouldn't have left the document in my hand. Ilu hechzar tali pikdoni. If you really truly returned the pikdoni, like you claim, why did you leave the shtar here? Kedei shlo echzar ve'ebenu. He said, and it's obvious people don't like to leave shtaros and the paintings back because they don't want the guy to claim a second time. Okay, so far the Rashbam just explained that in Hebrew, what shtach biyad my boy means in Aramaic. But now he gets to the punchline. Uchemo, and therefore, this is like mali l'shakeh b'mokam eidim domi. Lo aminan mali l'shakeh. He says, this migo, you want to say, believe me, migo, that I returned it, migo could have said Nansu. No. That's called the Migo B'mokom Eidim. The claim that you're saying is being contradicted by witnesses. Now, wait, let's hold on for a second. What does it mean? The claim that I'm putting forth is the only words coming out of my mouth are Hechzarti. That's all I'm saying. We're going back in time and saying, oh, why you believe to say Hechzarti? It must be Migo that answered. But the claim on the paper that I'm responding in court is one word called Hechzarti. Says the Rashbam, there are Eidim who are saying, lo hechzir. Now, The Rashbam is assuming that we know the Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Pei Aleph, which hopefully we'll get to mention tomorrow. The Gemara in Bava Metzia Daf Pei Aleph of days that says, Migul is great and wonderful and phenomenal as long as the claim that you're saying is not contradicted by Egan. If the claim that you're saying just isn't too mistaken, it's not too logical, it doesn't really make any sense, we don't think that it's right, that's when Migul kicks in. But if the claim that you're putting forth is outright against witnesses are saying you're partial lying, Migul from today tells a little bit of Migul. Migul is a way for Beis Din to figure out, am I telling the truth, am I not telling the truth? But if the Egan are saying that I'm lying, so then, of course, the Migul is going to be worthless. That's a Gemara, Ferish and Gemara, but we see a Dapay Aleph called the Migul Makom Egan Law and Rina.
How can you
have
Egan saying that I never
think? Oh, so now the multi million dollar question goes, where do you, what Egan exactly? Did I very well? So did I miss the witnesses here? Who are these witnesses exactly? So very, very strange, Rashbam. Rashbam says it's a Mali Shaka Makom Egan, and therefore it's no good. So if you take a look at the Rashbam again, the Rashbam was already sensitive. He already knew he already knew 800 years ago, you know, people were going to chepper and jump in the 6:50 in the morning and tea. Like, wait, who ate the word? The Rashbam put in the word, uchamo. It's like migo b'mokom edim. How is it like migo b'mokom edim? Oh, it's a star. But wait a second, what does the star say exactly? What does it say in the Shtar? I'm reading the Shtar in Beis Din. All the Shtar says is that Reuben gave an animal to Shimon to watch. It doesn't say that Shimon did or did not return the animal. So what's the Shtar talking about? What's the Malu L'Shak? Kim Malu L'Shak? Malu L'Shak is a phrase for me. Malu L'Shak means why would he lie? He's lying, telling the truth. So now we have this very, very strange Gemara with an equally difficult Rashbam. So the Gemara is pummeling back and forth. You say Migo against the Shtar of Yerim. Maybe not. We have no idea what the start of the Gemara are, why you should or should not really say to Migo, what gives Ashtar Gemara more clout over Migo. And the Rashbam says, oh, by the way, the issue is Migo Makom Edim. So he said, what are the Edim? I don't remember there being any Edim. So Rashbam says, no, there aren't really Edim. They're Kamo Edim. Where the Kamo Edim? The only Edim that is surfacing are the witnesses in the bottom of the document. And all those witnesses said is that Reuben gave an animal to Shimon. Nobody said anything about returning the animal. So we have a lot of work cut out for us to try to figure out what in the world is going on in between the lines. Why should this be a Migul Makom Edim, or why is it not a Migul Makom Edim? Hope that's a similar tomorrow. We'll try to begin to flesh out this. That's ready. One step.
Tomorrow we're in a classroom because there's a bris. Everybody have a wonderful day.
Yeah, you too.